The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday! And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. We got a lot to cover on today's episode, from Justin Gaethje's future to UFC Manchester to The Rock making an MMA movie. So let's waste no time. Let's begin with the story that I still can't stop thinking about. I find the psychology of the fight more interesting, or at least as interesting, as the fight. Like, I've never seen a sporting event in my life. Never seen a game. A football, a baseball, a basketball, a hockey. I've gone to all of them. I had season tickets before. I've never been able to stay from bell to bell. And I only shout, I'm just not a big sports fan, but I've seen a lot of political debates. And that'll put most people to sleep. They will do terrible numbers over on C-SPAN. But I enjoy the psychology of the battle, where for sure they're not going to touch one another. But there is a fight going on nonetheless. There is an alpha. There is an ideology that is going to be accepted and believed. There's a battle. I find that interesting. Now, I tell you that because it has seemed everybody, and at least within my orbit, that's a literal statement. I have not seen a single person, including Ariel Helwani, resist the concept that Ryan Garcia was performing, that he was trolling, and that he was acting. That is a very fascinating idea to me. Now, it could very well be the case. That in and of itself would be interesting. I would like to get to the psychology and get to the bottom of it. One of the reasons that a movie isn't filmed in one shot, no different than a TV show is done in one shot, is the same reason that actor from the movie or TV show, when they report to Letterman's couch or Jimmy Kimmel's chair, they don't stay in that character. They can't do it for long periods. It doesn't matter if you're the greatest actor ever. They can't hold it. The director's got to yell cut. So now you have Ryan Garcia holding it for a meaningful period of time. Nobody that's ever gone into character and had the sole right to choose that character. And we've only seen that tested a couple of times. In fact, that was tested in the world of professional wrestling to the extent that some people blame the demise of billionaire Ted's WCW on the fact that Hulk Hogan had final say on anything that his character did. And the problem with that is anyone that's ever been given that authority has only chosen one road, which is the cool road. They put themselves over. They build themselves up. The guy comes in. He gets to choose the role. He's going to be the ladies' man. What did you know? He's going to be the guy that nobody could beat. What did you know? He's going to be champion and he's going to be king. Nobody has ever selected a role that had authority over that role and chose to make themselves a doofus. Doesn't mean it can't be done. Doesn't mean that Ryan didn't just do it. But it would mean that you could act and you could perform and you could hold a character longer than Ed Norton ever considered it, longer than Robert De Niro ever even imagined. That it would mean that, which would put you in the category of a genius. And the people that are the greats never out themselves. The true greats will take it to the grave and you will never know. Garcia held it 4 days. First time for everything. Doesn't mean it couldn't be done. But what if he'd lost? I mean, think of that. What if he had lost? He would have had a supreme confidence. to the point of almost divine. And I know you non-athletes are very quick to gobble up the idea of confidence. It is extremely rare, and more times than not, is a negative, not a positive. I know that you had dreams and your PE teacher and your parents and your coaches all told you, but your PE teacher, your parents, and your coaches don't have a gold medal from anything. Athletes and confidence don't go very hand in hand. I know you were told that Garcia bet $2 million on himself. These things did not happen. For Garcia to have done all of these things because he was confident that it would drive business, that it would throw Haney off, and he was confident that he was going to win. Would have you done that? I mean, I'm just asking you, if you could pick a character and you could go out and take it on the world to drive business in a match that you were so supremely confident that you were going to win, would you choose to look like a doofus? If you're going to tell me that it's all true, that Garcia knew he was going to win, and you're one of those idiots that think he bet $2 million on himself because you read it online. If you're one of those idiots, and you put yourself in his shoes, would have you made yourself a fool? Or would have you made yourself the cool guy? The ladies' man? The everyman? The starring man? Like everybody else in history that's ever had a say. I'm just asking you, what would you do? And as you try to tell me about confidence, I will let you know, Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney fought six times prior. This was their seventh fight. Most of you don't know that. And they split them. Ryan Garcia won three. Devin Haney won three. So for you to tell me that there was a confidence is just a silly thing for you to say. It's a very silly thing. And it does make me wonder, right? I mean, if Ryan Garcia had lost his mind, if these things had happened, which were largely believed to be substance-induced, of which is a story that he's sticking with. He's sticking with he likes the pot and he likes the booze, and that he did the pot and he did the booze in training camp. Like, he's sticking with that. We weren't believing it for a while, but now we believe everything he said. Okay, well, we got a couple of constants here, which was substance abuse. But if you're quick to believe anything that comes out of his mouth, it's no longer an idea of is he the one that's crazy. You now are, which is why it's so important that you get this one right. It's a very interesting topic. And now we have a conversation where our own Sean O'Malley is going after Ryan Garcia and saying that he would like to box with him. Now, it's a slippery slope. If you have somebody who is at a mental challenge, a mental deficiency, which you all said 1 week ago, you don't go fight that guy. You don't beat that guy up. You don't look to beat that guy up, and you don't look to fight that guy. So it's a wildly dangerous proposition. And to understand that the captain of the ship that's steering it, that you're going with, and you've now gone left and right, you've now gone up and down, you've now gone hot and cold, you've gone yes and no. In 7 days, the person steering the ship is a barely high school educated boxer. And whatever he says, you go with. He says, I'm crazy. You go with it. He says, I'm not crazy. You go with it. I'm just suggesting for you. It's very important that you get this one right. And you're left to guess. But why would somebody, including Ariel, I'm reading Ariel's tweets right now. Why would somebody believe the exact opposite statement made by the same person? Like, we didn't bring witnesses in. We didn't bring evidence in. We brought the same person who, to get you to believe one, must get you to believe that the other was a lie. Oh, by the way, told by him. It's very fascinating. The psychology of it is fascinating. And I hear, like, I love that O'Malley wants to box with Ryan, and he's not the only one. Henry Cejudo was the one that brought Ryan Garcia over into the MMA realm. Henry wanted to go and box him. But the concept that that is going to happen or even historically has happened is false. Conor McGregor and Floyd is the only time that that has happened and done a level of business. Now, it was very bad business. And not because it didn't generate a bunch of money. It was bad business because more money was spent than was generated. I realized the story was told to you differently. That story was a lie. The arena did not sell out. They did not do records on pay-per-view. They did not make the money they claimed. And the benefactor that lost, didn't want anybody to know he lost, kept his name out of it. You don't even know to this day. You're happy to tell me what the pay-per-views were, and you're happy to tell me what those guys made, and you're happy to stand on it, but you can't tell me who wrote the check. You just can't. You can't tell me the person that scribbled out the check for the amount that you claim that they made because you read it on the internet. And that very person was offered an opportunity to do a rematch and turned it down. Now, I only tell you that because the idea of MMA versus boxer not only doesn't work, it hasn't worked. And if you want to go to boxing, which would be the opposite of why we made an argument for MMA in the first place, starting back in 1993, our entire argument, which turned out to win the day, was that that's not fighting. That is one single element of fighting. What we do is fighting. We won the day, and now we are the ones that want to go back. Take that away and just go left hand, right hand. I find that interesting. You want to know what would be more interesting? Truly, you want to know what would be more interesting? Take two MMA guys and have them box. Like, if you could do Conor versus Floyd in a boxing match, or you could do Conor versus Khabib in a boxing match. I maintain you have better business and more interest with Conor versus Khabib. I don't know why we do the crossover. I don't know what's at risk. I don't even know what fun it is. Simple observation. Care to disagree? This Ryan Garcia thing go. I just can't let it die. I want to let it die. I'm fascinated by your ability to accept whatever you've been told. I'm fascinated by it. You were told the exact opposite last week as you're told today by the same person, and you believed both. There is no resistance either way. When people were saying that Garcia had lost his mind, there was nobody coming out the other way and poking holes in that, going, I don't know about that. That's not really consistent with substance abuse. That's not really consistent with CTE. What I find here is to be like, none of you did that. And the actions that were taken by Garcia, because I keep hearing people talking about confidence. Oh, he was so supremely confident. The confident guy doesn't look like the doofus. He looks like the everyman. He looks like the guy that can get the girl. He looks like the guy that the other guys are trying to be like. He does not devise a character for himself that becomes so controversial, there's a push made of the commission to call the fight. And it's a very interesting thing because I'm told that he had such confidence. Well, when you do that role, that's the role that you do when you're planning to lose. You're planning to lose and it gets done. You go, yes, I lost, but I was crazy. But look at me now. I am no longer crazy. You'll hear that by this very interview. You'll hear me speaking clearly and acting normal. And therefore, please give me another match. And I can't seem to get around it. Now, time is going to tell. And I'm not proclaiming that Garcia wasn't acting. I'm not proclaiming he wasn't working us. I'm not proclaiming, even though it would be incredibly inconsistent, and the number one inconsistency that he would have with anybody else that came out and created a character in the media that worked would be the fact that 4 days after it allegedly worked, he turned on himself. That would be the number one inconsistency. He would be a better performer than anyone that's ever gone in front of the camera, and he would have broken the golden rule, which is he would stop the train in its tracks and it could never be duplicated. He'd be letting you know there's a performance here and you are not to take it serious. Now, it's the number one reason that we don't have heels within our sport. They can't take the booze. So if Garcia was to act crazy and he saw what all of you said about him, I could see where he would want to get that monkey off of his back and come out and tell you, but that's not the character that you would develop if you thought you were going to win.
And it's interesting, isn't it?
And I look at it and I get more fascinated because I meet people that tell me they like fighting. And of course they don't. They'll tell me that they like boxing, which of course they don't. And like to prove that somebody doesn't like fighting is not hard. You could take any element of it and then just ask a person, have you ever gone? It's close to free to get in. Like, you go to a judo match, no problem. You go to the Olympic trials for judo. You watch judo for an entire two-day period, every weight class, the absolute best. It'll be $10, bring your kid for free. It could be going on across the street and none of you would go. All right, great. Do you like jiu-jitsu? Let's play the same game. It's going on across the street and none of you would go. There is wrestling done at every junior high and every high school in America. And none of you go. There is boxing that's going to be going on. The Olympic trials are going to be next month. It will be an entire week of boxing followed by the Olympics. 94 days after that. Of which you're not going to watch. But you just told me you loved boxing. You told me you loved combat. And the reality is, which you don't even know about yourself, is you love a story. And you love for it to unfold. What you love is conflict met with conflict resolution. And the leaders in wrestling, Christian Pyle himself, maintains the reason they have a hard time filling up an arena for wrestling is because they do a straight line bracket. You don't know, and you can't promise, and you can't advertise, and you can't build for this person versus this person because you're not making that match. They're in a tournament, and you don't know for sure if they'll ever run into one another. And Christian Pyle is right. And I share that with you because Garcia didn't get you in that he was crazy. Like, you're not setting out to watch crazy people fight. You've never in your life set out to watch crazy people fight. But there was a story, and the story was being told, and it was bringing attention. It made you look in that direction. And it was captivating. All the things that the Olympic trials in boxing are not, or the Olympics themselves for that matter. And I only use that as the biggest and the greatest showcase with the biggest and the greatest athletes. And even that does not pique your interest in the least, but you would swear with your hand on a stack of Bibles that you're a huge boxing fan, and you're not. Nor are you a wrestling fan or a jiu-jitsu fan. You're not even a combat fan. You're a fan of stories. You're a fan of something of interest. You're a fan of something that has a conflict met with a resolution. And the reason I tell you that, I keep seeing MMA guys going after boxers. Now, I don't see it in reverse. And I don't mind the idea that they would have a dream. I don't mind the idea that they would have something that they wanted to go out and do. But as I'm standing back on the sidelines, I'm not going to pretend they're doing it because they think that they are skilled in that area. It wouldn't matter if an MMA guy was going over to box or go to jiu-jitsu or go to wrestle or go to play volleyball or go to play basketball or go to play badminton. It would make no difference. It's not his field. The outcome and the result would not matter. And this is a mistake that so many promoters make. They think to have a big fight, you must have two big personalities, two big accomplishments, two big records, two big titles. That's what they think. But to have a big fight, you must have a big discrepancy when it's over. You must know going in, the gap is going to be big. It's not about who gets over. It's not about who goes up. This person has got to go down while this person goes up. There's your gap. And that is what will make for a big fight. If you don't have that, if there is not a risk, if the outcome of that performance and that commodity does not change the loser's life in a negative way, you don't have a big match. And you cannot bring an MMA guy to boxing and create that. It cannot happen because that is not what he does. That is not his dream. That will not go against his record. That will not matter. But you don't have MMA guys that are ever short of telling you that's what they want to do. And eventually they will get to the truth because they think they're going to make a whole bunch of money. But there isn't a whole bunch of money. That is a fallacy. There was a mistake made. There was a person that made a very large bet on Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather. That person lost. It was a losing bet. The entire reason you don't know who the benefactor was. He kept his name out of it because he was embarrassed. Rich guys don't like to lose money. Rich guys don't generally lose money. But if that is the game that they play and they play it well and they keep their name out of it, they prefer to. Which is why you don't know who wrote those checks. I mean, I only share with you, it is a fallacy. And it's a fallacy for many reasons, but none greater than the basic concept, which you don't understand, executives don't understand, and even promoters don't understand. When that match is over, there's got to be a gap, which means one guy's got to fall from his almighty perch. And if you have a record of 0-0 in any sport, in this case boxing, that is simply not possible. You got to stay with me on this. John Jones, okay? Now, this is the talk of the town. John Jones has returned. How do we know that? Because he told us. On social media, complete with a photograph that included a gym and training partners and sweat and none other than Greg Jackson. I mean, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words. But we don't have to just take the picture. We actually had the words. From who? From John, who said, I returned. Right? Okay, so we agree. John Jones is back. But there's a difference in a guy's working out. You know, guy's got a broken foot. There's machines that you can do and you can pedal with arms only. There's curls and dumbbells and exercises you can do. That is very different to returning to MMA. If you can do MMA in the gym, that is signifying my body is healed. Now, perhaps my timing's not there and my cardio's not there and I'm not in shape to compete, but I am medically cleared and able to compete. It's a big deal. And John Jones made that statement within 1 hour of Dana White revealing the UFC is going to Manchester. And the only clue that Dana gave was from a comment that he had made 15 days prior that we're going back to England. Oh, by the way, we've got 2 British champions. So that leads you to believe those 2 British champions, Tom Aspinall, Leon Edwards, are going to be put to work. Now, make sure you stay with me here. Because your feature match is very likely Tom Aspinall. Tom Aspinall has headlined sold-out arenas in England twice that I know of right off the top of my head. Tom Aspinall has 1 loss. And it was in one of those headlining acts opposite Curtis Blaydes. I think Curtis Blaydes is deserving. So do you. I think that Jalton Almeida was being looked at to be a top contender, being groomed, and very likely would already have an announcement made that he was going to take on Tom Aspinall. Tom Aspinall would agree with me. He knew that's the direction it was going, and Curtis Blaydes was able to beat him. Now, the bigger fight and the better poster. Whatever that is worth to you. I haven't checked the rankings, but the rankings probably support that too. Is Tom Aspinall opposite Curtis Blaydes? So if we're sitting around and we're trying to guess who Tom is going to have, it is a very interesting topic. Why? Because the interim championship has never been defended before. And the interim championship, though never specifically stated, has always been your golden ticket to number one contendership. In fact, the boys in the locker room themselves will not call out the undisputed champion if there's an interim champion because they know they're wasting their breath. They know the interim champion draws into the undisputed champion, and they have to. They have to because you have an interim champion because the undisputed champion can't fight. So if the interim champion can fight and in Tom's situation is willing and going to fight, How do you punish him by taking the belt off of him? Well, you don't have a choice. The moment the bell rings, on the Undisputed Champion's return, you no longer have an interim champion. Do you understand that? I want to make sure you do, because it's not the way the media has reported it to you. The media did not understand this. The media believes that when John Jones returns to fight Stipe, Tom Aspinall will be in the front row. And they believe, should John Jones win, that he could turn and call out Tom Aspinall and you will have your interim champion face your undisputed champion. They are wrong. That is impossible. It is impossible because the moment the bell rings for John Jones' next fight, the moment the bell rings, the interim championship is gone. And we've never been confronted with that because we've always put the champion opposite the interim champion. Tom would no longer be interim champion. Which means at the end of the night, should they face off in a perfect scenario, should you build a poster, you do not have two belts. It's important that you understand that. Now, you take that technicality in conjunction with, I, Chael Sonnen, do not believe John Jones is going to retire. I do not believe John Jones is going to go anywhere until he handles one final piece of business, which will be against Tom Aspinall. Now, if you put Surreal opposite Tom and Surreal gets the jump on him, you will, in effect, be retiring John Jones. While Surreal is an easy fight for John, and John would know that. He's already done it. While Surreal would be a good payday for John, which John already knows. He's already done it. I don't think John's fighting for the money anymore. I take John at his word that he's fighting for legacy. Now, you never got to take a fighter at their word because they're suddenly going to tell you something without having their fingers crossed in their pocket. Right? You get the right to change your mind. But in John's case, I do think it's different, and he is overcoming a lot. To leave a world championship, walk away for 3 years just to try to gain weight, then he comes back and wins in such an incredible fashion, then he gets this back and forth with Stipe, who people said at that time particularly was the greatest heavyweight to have ever done it. Fedor's off the board. John comes back, even wants to do it at International Fight Week, then wants to do it at Madison Square Garden where he gets a signed contract, and then he gets hurt. I mean, he has overcome a lot to even come back at all. And I don't think it's about the money, and I don't think it's about defending the championship. I think it's about the idea that Stipe has something John wants, which is the status of the greatest heavyweight ever. So when John gets done there and it's believed that he's going to ride off in the sunset, I don't think so. I think he's going to finish his business with Tom Aspinall. But now imagine a scenario where Tom is no longer there, because Tom wasn't here in November of last year when they went to Madison Square Garden. There was no talk that Tom was the guy. The talk 100% by all of you and the pundits was Sergey Pavlich. That was the guy that the pundits and you said John would never face. John will retire before he faces him. Sergey went down. Tom took that spot. And I'm just letting you know, if you put Tom against Surreal and Surreal wins, if John, in fact, is only fighting for legacy, not accomplishment and not money, if those things are true, then matching Tom and Surreal with the Surreal victory effectively retires John Jones. And that is a very big calculation you're going to have to make. That is a massive calculation to make for one night of business in a match that's not even the main event. The only way Tom is main event is if Leon or any other champion isn't booked. Tom with interim status must fight in the co-main event. So even if you believe, and I think we're down, I think it's Curtis Blaydes is what I think. But because that's not announced, you have the talk of Surreal. Surreal has come out and said, I can't do it. I'm filming a movie. Which, I mean, in the world of dumb things, that's highly possible. Every athlete wants to be an actor. Every actor wants to be an athlete. I don't know why it is. It's like the policeman and the fireman. Like they just can't get it right. So Surreal might be off filming a movie, or he's giving us all the swerve. So I believe if you're making your predictions and you are down to Blaydes versus Surreal, you one have Surreal's statement of the alleged movie that's nobody's going to watch, or you have a rematch with Curtis Blades, who's already done it once, who needs to fix the story, and who, if he wins, by the way, don't forget, for the first time ever, having an interim championship does not guarantee you the next shot at the undisputed champion. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, guys, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly on to you. I haven't skipped a beat using Mint Mobile services. I have a great service even when I'm traveling for over less than 70% of what I was paying before. Listen to Uncle Chael and say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/Chael. That's mintmobile.com/Chael. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Chael. $45 upfront payment required. That's equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Guys, I'm really into things that add more convenience to my life. It's even better when it also comes with safety in a high-quality package. I'm talking about my Eufy Video Lock. I'm still loving this thing. I love this thing so much that I'd like to invest in the company. I am so impressed with this product that I'm willing to back it. And if anyone out there knows how I can do it, please reach out. You gotta check it out for yourself. I'll probably do a quick social post, but for now, just search Eufy Video Lock. Do it online. It's a 3-in-1 smart lock, 2K camera with an audio and doorbell. It's easy to install. It has fingerprint recognition, so I don't even have to remember a code. I can control it all in an app, which again, the convenience is such a big plus for me. We are always on the go, and being able to monitor our home on the road is such a nice option. Not only that, I don't have to rush to the door if the doorbell rings. I can either open the door or ignore whoever's at the door by vetting them through the app. There is no monthly fees for security video storage. The battery is rechargeable, and each charge lasts about 4 months. This Eufy lock is fantastic, and I highly recommend it. Search Eufy Video Lock online. That's Eufy, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your front door. This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your first stop for the best in Western style. And by the way, you don't have to be into the Western look to grab a good-looking pair of boots. I recently got a pair of ostrich skin round-tip boots, and I'm warm with my suit. These boots are so versatile that I can throw them on with a full head-to-toe suit. And Anthony Smith came right up to me, and he's asking me where I got them. Well, I told him the only place to get them, Tecovas. And they have a seasonal limited edition offering. It's right now, this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, accessory, and more. My wife just surprised me with the ostrich wallet and a belt for my birthday, in case you've seen me. I feel like I look pretty sharp in it. I truly do. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, their direct-to-consumer pricing keeps value on your feet and money in your pocket. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary beverage or two, and shop for new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into the store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your favorite pair of boots today. Justin Gaethje is not going to be fighting for a title again. Is something you should probably be very careful when you say. There's a lot of times, and there's even a fun moment. Now, it's done from our evil side. But we enjoy it nonetheless. We preface it. We want to act as though we don't enjoy it. And what I'm talking about is calling for a guy's retirement. And we call for his retirement, again, giving the biggest insult that we can think of. But we do it in a way that just makes it seem like we're a concerned viewer, maybe even fan. And we come out and we say, well, he's not going to be fighting for a title again, and he's in an organization that has nothing but champions and contenders. Once you prove you cannot be a champion or a contender, you are no longer with the organization. And Justin Gaethje, coming off a loss to a 45-pounder, and at 35 years old, won't be fighting for the belt again. And a lot of times, historically, you would have said enough. That would have been perfect. As a matter of fact, that same conversation is going on right now with Alex Volkanovski. 35 years old, coming off of a loss. Can he get the match with Topuria? If he could get the match, they would have given it to him already. If they could do that match, that would already be booked, and it wouldn't just be Topuria sitting front row at UFC 300. It would also be Volk on the opposite side. Cameo at some point thrown to each, a discussion by your announce team on each. Rest of the world waiting on the on-sale date to buy tickets, and what's the location going to be? So, it's not as though coming off of a loss, particularly decisive, at 35 years old, offers a lot of examples where you could go on and fight for the championship, and if you can't fight for the championship, you can't win the championship. Now, don't try to correct me and tell me times through history where guys did win championships without fighting for them. I know. I was there. But right now, you can't. Moving forward, you can't. At least, not at 155 pounds. But the reason I keep telling you to be careful, the reason I will not come out and say those words is the example that I just gave you about Volkanovski, that's going to give you pause. That's going to make you think. But more than anything, the fact that Volkanovski hasn't been given Topuria and that rematch isn't done might be because they like another option first, which is Max. It might be. And the reason that very few people are calling out Topuria in the first place might be because he's already got his opponent. Now, whether that's Max or whether that is in fact Volkanovski or what kind of deal behind the scenes they've got worked out that will be revealed to us at a later time, it seems as though something seems to be in place enough that nobody... One thing you don't want to do in this sport is call somebody out and not get it. Now, you're much better to call somebody out and not get it than you are to not make the call in the first place, but I'm just sharing with you, when you're dealing with the top guys, the reason to know, can I get it, is so much is done behind the scenes. That when guys are being quiet and they're not speaking up, that's because somebody came whispering to them. They whispered and they caught wind of a secret. So they did nothing with it. But I can't tell you that if you get knocked out, you don't get a fight for the belt. I can't do that. Can't tell you if you're 35 years old. and you get knocked out, you don't get a fight for the belt. I can't do that. Particularly when you were in a fight that was for a belt. I mean, the finest example that's playing out right now, right here, right now, is Dustin Poirier. Dustin Poirier was knocked out in a BMF title match by Justin Gaethje. Dustin Poirier had to get up. He had to go out there and he had to be willing to pass the torch, which is, I am a star, you are not. You're really good, I'm really good, but I'm popular good and you're observed and good. So that's what he had to do. What a risk to take on St. Denis. But he did it and he won. Dustin Poirier did not win a round. Okay, so he gets knocked out in a fight. They wake him up to put him in another fight where they wanted him specifically for geographical purposes with a business emphasis on selling tickets. All right. And he did not win a round, but he won a combination and he also won the fight. And he is now signed to fight for the world championship. So if you just look at Poirier and you look at what happened to Poirier, you can't then tell me that Justin Gaethje can't get back up and go forward and find himself in a world title fight. You just can't do that. It's going to take a minute. And Justin Gaethje has misses, right? Like, he has some stuff that he does so well that you could even put in a category of Justin Gaethje where it's only him. He does it better than anybody. But there is some misses. For example, calling for fights. He doesn't understand how many fans he has, you guys, that are going to back him up with whatever direction he gives you. He doesn't understand that. And therefore, he doesn't give you direction. He doesn't call for those fights. And I don't know for sure where he will go next. But I got a pretty good idea of where he's not going to go. I don't think that he's going to have to play with the same guys. I think Justin and Oliveira fighting each other somewhere down the way where a proper weight agreement is actually made and enforced was very likely. Now they're both coming off of losses. What a great time to put them together. Well, no, it's almost the wrong time to put them together because that would eliminate one and they're both stars still. So if you can have these big stars, but they're ranked closer to 8, 9, 10, I mean, you're in a really sweet spot because there are not very many guys that are absolute needle movers that are not in the top five. And Justin Gaethje cannot come out and complain that Dustin Poirier is getting a spot. Well, why not? Dustin's going to fight for the world title, which is what Justin wanted to do. Oh, and by the way, Justin fought Dustin for that opportunity. Oh, and by the way, Justin beat Dustin. Why is Dustin getting the call? I understand there's an answer to that. But what I'm suggesting is when a guy that you had just beaten gets that opportunity, it isn't time for you to get pushed aside or for you to get forced to retire. I'll share something with you that has surprised me. I have never seen a fight. I have never seen a fight celebrated as much as this one after the fight. When the fight is over, the clips and the highlights and the conversations, I have just never seen a fight. And the only one I could compare it to is Forrest and Bonner. Or it has this kind of accolades after the fact. But you know what? I have never seen a fight. I'm going to finish my sentence now. That is this much grander after it's done and a rematch not be called for. Nobody has even hinted at a rematch. Nobody's ever made the suggestion. In fact, it looks like the BMF is going to leave the division. It looks like the BMF is going to take that belt and some 45-pounders are going to be given an opportunity. So what do you do with Justin Gaethje? What does Justin Gaethje do from here? Well, he's in a really great position. I mean, just his last two fights. This last fight that he did is amongst the most coveted fights to ever take place. He was part of that. Doesn't happen without him. His previous fight was for the all-so-elusive BMF title against a guy who needs no introduction in Dustin Poirier, and Gaethje left him face down and with the belt. I mean, it looks as though everything is going so well for Justin Gaethje. Magical moments just keep happening all around Justin Gaethje. So why, when I wake up today, do I read a headline, and why is there somebody starting a narrative that this could be the end for Justin Gaethje? It looks to me like we're right in the middle of things. Justin Gaethje's performances, his style, his outcomes, the accolades after the fact seem to be right on track and very accustomed with the Justin Gaethje everybody loved in the first place. I told you guys many times, there's not five people walking this planet that understand the business of MMA. Not five. Five is a tremendously generous number. I say five just so there's no exaggeration and there's no way that I'm wrong. And you would not believe how many executives in MMA, people that have spent 20 years at the highest levels, do not understand what it is we're doing here. They do not understand the psychology of the fan, of the consumer, of the sponsor. They do not know what it takes to build anticipation. They don't even know that the key to the industry, if you're talking about monetization, has to be that very word, anticipation. It cannot be excitement. It can't be greatness. It can't be spectacle. It can't be athletic. It can't be sport. It can't be anything that you can see on the internet after it's concluded. It has to be a feeling that comes prior to make you buy the ticket, pick up the t-shirt, host the party, attend the party, push the buy button. It has to be ahead of time. And when I tell you executive, been in here 20 years, that do not understand what is going on, I watch and observe that with professional wrestlers. There's something called the shoot interview. And a shoot interview came out to be the definition and the word that's going to be used when the wrestler is going to drop the act and just level with you. That was called a shoot. Now, the rest of the time was called a work. It's where the person was in character. It's where Hulk Hogan is not coming out as Terry Bollea. He is coming out as Hulk Hogan. He's wearing the red and the yellow, brother. And over a very short period of time, I mean like record period of time, the shoot became the new work, and you never knew when they were telling the truth. But every now and then you can see through the curtain, and it would be an amazing thing for me to watch a wrestler, even a second generation guy whose pops was in the business, whose uncle was in the business, sometimes third generation guys whose grandfather was in the business and their dad was in the business. And they do not understand when a person's working and when a person is shooting, or when they, for their own character, should blur the lines as opposed to come at you straight. It's just a fascinating thing for me. And I watched an interview with Ronda Rousey, and it was so awesome to see a person who they themselves was a benefactor and then left the competitive sports world to go into the entertainment sports world, came out the other side and still doesn't understand. And there's no part of that that is an insult. I share with you that genuinely fascinates me. Genuinely. How you could make it to the top of the bill of a WrestleMania, it fascinates me. And Ronda largely was talking about that she had her feelings hurt by people in the MMA media that she thought were friends. and they were so quick to dance on her grave when she got beat. And that they're a bunch of a-holes and they don't like her, and she's glad that she had that experience so she could at least see who her true friends were. And it was just an amazing concept. Because I'm so curious what the other side of the coin would be. Like, if you were, and in this case, we're talking Rhonda, it could be anybody, though. But if you were Rhonda's friend, and you had a job to do in the MMA media, and Rhonda lost, what do you do then? How do you marry those two together? How do you remain her friend and write and or cover the topic where she lost? Do you mind if Rhonda got beaten up as long as she beat up the other person worse? Do you, like, for example, is it outcome or performance based? I'm just wondering, as the friend, are you hoping for her safety? Well, you didn't get it. She got the hell kicked out of her. Oh no, that's terrible. Well, wait a minute, I didn't finish the story. She beat the hell out of the other person even worse. Oh, that's great. And that I would be confused by. Or Rhonda had her dreams dashed, as opposed to she destroyed her opponent's dreams. It's a very peculiar situation. I'm not sure why you couldn't cover Rhonda, say what happened, which would include if she was to be beaten. If she was to be beaten, I think you could still be her friend, but write down and or report how she was beaten. If she was outstruck, by example, if you were to comment on either her offense or her defense or lack thereof, I don't think that would stop you from maintaining your friendship. I don't see how one would have anything to do with the other. And I think it was very genuine. I think it caught her off guard. I think it hurt her feelings. I think that that's pretty tough stuff. It also surprises me where even to this day, she doesn't understand what the MMA media's problem is with her. The fact that she doesn't understand that to this day does surprise me. I mean, I got to tell you, in all fairness, it does surprise me. Guys, let's say we have a relationship, okay? And this is an extreme example, but it's an example I'm going to use because I know it's one that you will understand. I am the DA. You kill somebody. You committed a murder in my jurisdiction. Now, I have knowledge that you did it, but we're friends. So I am not going to press charges. Okay, great. Well, I now need to step down as the DA. If I'm not able to do my job and have a friendship, I've got to step down. So you see where, regardless of your relationship with an athlete, in this case, Rhonda, but any athlete, where if you could not cover them, if you could not go out and say what you saw and report what happened, it's a very interesting proposition to then believe that that carries over to a personal level, that somehow you were disingenuous, insincere. It really does surprise me. And there are times where an athlete is going to need the media. I mean, no example would be greater than that of Brock Lesnar right now. Brock Lesnar has been canceled for allegedly sending message to a person who he has to this day never met. Never, to anyone's knowledge, even seen face-to-face. It's an amazing thing. I mean, that would be very simple to come out and argue against. Like, I don't need to tell you what was said or what was in a text. I would not even need to tell you. If you know for sure that there was no claim that he was even in the same room as said person, like, let's just stop right there. Brock would be free and clear. They could even work it into an angle and put him television on Monday nights. But Brock, in his entire career, made a grand total of zero friends in the media. So nobody in the media has come out to defend him. Nobody. Regardless of how blatantly obvious it is that the treatment towards him is right. Do you understand these things? Do you understand where this is a push and a pull? Do you understand where there's not like some great integrity or standard put on MMAmedia.com being ran from the dude's house with his pajamas? Like, do you understand that? Do you understand where if you didn't return calls and you didn't return relationships, that you cannot expect somebody to just be waiting there for you? It's a very basic concept. And I would tell you, I've been surprised to watch it, because I always make the assumption, and I have been wrong more times than not, I make the assumption that the greats, they were able to fill a house, command pay-per-views, move the t-shirts, all due to a psychology. I have always imagined that they had the greater understanding. And there's times that when the story is done, completely done, even when they finally realize, when they finally wake up and smell the roses, they still have it wrong. They still haven't put their finger on why. And it's just a very incredible thing. And when you're out there, the only thing that's real is the money and the miles. There is no relationships. There is no friends from 9 to 5. There's a business. And it's as cold and hard as any other business. The Rock is getting ready to do a docu-pic? Is that the word that The Rock used? He's getting ready to tell the true life story of Mark Kerr. And The Rock himself, not only who is funding this and promoting it, he's going to be the one that plays Mark Kerr. So, I want to tell you a little bit about Mark Kerr. I'm excited for this project, and I'm excited to see how well they do, to see The Rock in this role, but it also makes me feel good to put this type of a tribute to Mark Kerr. And I was at Madison Square Garden. I'm trying to think of who the main event was. Kelvin Gastelum fought and lost to Darren Till. Now, I just tell you that fight, I think it was third from the top of the bill. I can't think of the main event. That fight, though, main event, was that Derek Lewis, Daniel Cormier? I don't have to know. I'm trying to think of the year. During the festivities of Fight Week, The Rock takes the stage. A bunch of fans are there, and this is just a media day. This is a day, if not 2 days, before the fight. But it's you guys. It's people that care, that have come in and stopped what they're doing on a weekday, right? A Thursday or a Friday during working hours to be able to fill up a small room. At a minimum, you now know that you have your audience. You have the hardcore, attentive MMA audience. So The Rock lays out this idea, and he says, I'm bringing this to Hollywood. I'm bringing your guys' story. The love and the passion that you all have for MMA, I'm going to do it with one of your heroes. I looked up and down the roster. I looked up and down from the beginning of 1993. I went all over the world and all the different organizations, and I have found the one guy that you want to hear about the most. I'm going to make a movie on the Smashing Machine. The Rock was expecting something. He paused when he said Smashing Machine. Then the next words out of his mouth was Mark Kerr. The Rock was expecting something, and it never came. And I remember being in that building. I was up at the desk where I was covering for a different role. And I was watching. It was one of these situations where I'm turning back and I'm watching this over my shoulder. And I remember in that moment knowing this movie will never get made. When The Rock came out to the MMA audience, the only audience in the world that would know Mark Kerr. Like, for example, Mark Kerr graduated from Syracuse University. If you went onto the campus of Syracuse University and you did a piece for Mark Kerr, you're not guaranteed anyone's going to know. I mean, it was a while ago, and He was on the wrestling team, which they didn't care about very much. In fact, over time, they cared about it so little that they dropped it and it doesn't exist anymore. And I just share, you could go to Japan and you could bring Pride back and get all the fans that knew exactly who he was, but they're new fans now. This weren't around back then. Mark Kerr was fighting at a time when headbutting was legal. And you only wrapped your hands if you wanted to. There was no such thing as a commission. They would weigh you in, but it didn't matter what you weighed in at. There was extremely few rules. Now, we don't headbutt anymore, but other than that, aside from the biting, the eye gouging, and the groin stuff, pretty similar to how it is right now. But that's just a different model. It's a different fan base. It's a different time. So when The Rock was in front of the folks and he said, Smashing Machine Mark Kerr, I knew in that moment when I heard that silence and saw the look on The Rock's face, that movie was not going to be made. And that was a meaningful amount of time ago. I mean, Darren Till and Kelvin Gastelum, boy, that was a long time. Are we talking 4 years, guys? Derek Lewis versus Daniel Cormier. I think that's all the same. Boy, we're talking a long time ago. And I had it wrong. They are going to make the movie. The Rock is in MMA training camp right now. Bulk up, look like Mark Kerr, and they're going to start the production of the movie. And I just want you to know a little about Mark Kerr. Starting with the fact that he was a wrestler. 190-pound wrestler at Syracuse, which dropped their wrestling program. So Mark Kerr is one of the few NCAA champions Syracuse ever had. I have not looked it up, but there's a chance that he's the only NCAA champion that they ever had. So a very big deal. In fact, he won the weight class at 190 pounds, and he had a future MMA star and champion in the finals. I believe the score was 9-4 favoring Mark Kerr. Over Oklahoma State's 190-pounder, Randy Couture. So, Kerr continued wrestling. And Kerr was the guy. He was a top guy in this country, and we sent him off to represent us in the world championships and other world championships. Somebody else would beat him in Olympic year. Just for example, 92, where Kerr went through that process, but the Olympic spot went to Mark the Hammer Coleman. In 1996, Kerr was one of the guys. He was right there, but the Olympic spot and the Olympic gold medal went to Kurt Angle. So Mark Kerr takes his focus off of wrestling and puts it onto MMA. Now, at that time in MMA, it was still called No Hold Barred. No Holds Barred. It was still called cage fighting. Some people called it mixed martial arts, but it you didn't have to. The group that was calling it mixed martial arts and the group, and then the really smart people that would tell you it's actually the sport of pancration. It's just that was taken out of the Olympic Games in 1904. Like, you would hear all of these different things, but it was in a very different place. And if you were a very good wrestler, you were dominating at that time. Now, that only lasted for another couple of years. Only a couple of years. The Don Fries and the Marco Huas has really showed the world that there's a different sport where you start to learn how to use your hands, lose your feet, have that wrestling, know what to do on the ground. Then the Randy Couture's came in, showed the world that you can also take this sport very serious. You don't have to cover yourself in tattoos while doing shots of Jim Beam as a way of making yourself one of these tough, scary guys. You could eat healthy and go to bed on time and get two training sessions in a day while sitting down with a coach and a trainer watching tapes of your future opponent, taking notes. So that changed around the Randy Couture time. But Mark Kerr got grabbed up and he got pulled in by people where their answer for what do I have to do to be good? What do I have to do, coach? What do I need to do, coach? I want to be great. And the coach's answer was anabolic steroids. So Kerr wanted to be good. He wanted to be great. Even though he was college educated, he was an athlete first. And I understand that mindset to the point that I can't understand when people don't. But if you grew up as an athlete, it does not matter who the coach is. If it's your coach or it's somebody else's coach, if that's coach, he is above you. You will speak to him in ways that put him above you. If it's your own coach and you want to be a good athlete, you want to be a national champion, a world team member, an Olympian, all the things that Mark Kerr wanted to be, you don't ever question a coach. And in your entire life, from the time you were a little boy until now, no coach has ever purposely misled you. So when the coach infirms the smashing machine, who's yet to lose, he's the biggest, strongest of the bunch. He was 190 pounds, the second heaviest weight class there was in his collegiate years, 18 through 23. When he went into his Olympic level years, he was 220 pounds, the second biggest weight class there was. He's already huge. He's already athletic. He's already strong. But Mark began taking the anabolic steroids. This is what he was told he needed if he wanted to be great. And they weren't the right ones, just so you know. There's a number of steroids. There's a number of what's called clean steroids. There's also what's known as dirty steroids. There's perfectly legal steroids that you can go right into a pharmacy with a doctor's note. And there's steroids that some guy made in his kitchen, put into vials, passed off to a runner to meet in the back of a Gold's Fitness. And it got Mark into a very tough spot. He began to hurt his body. To hurt the body, he would turn to pain medicine. Pain medicine had opiates in it. Opiates led to addiction. I'm trying to word real light. I'm trying to go brief because for me, one of the more interesting parts of the story, like if you've got a guy and he can't make the team and he turned to steroids and now he's made the team. In fact, he's setting records. That is generally the way the story had always been for guys on steroids. Generally, that is the way the story had always been. And also ran one of the guys and now all of a sudden he's the guy and he's got his little secret. It was very different for Mark Kerr. Mark was already the guy. Mark had never touched steroids and he won the NCAA. He had never touched steroids and he represented this country at the World Championships. He had never touched steroids and he was right there with the Mark Colemans and the Kurt Angles to make the Olympic team. So it was a very strange thing to then turn to steroids. It's just not normally what you would do. Boy, that's a lot of stuff for me to know about Mark Kerr. That's a lot of stuff for me to know. Like if I know that stuff, if I know that heavy and dark stuff, how come I can't tell you who his coach was? How come I can't tell you where he trained? How come I don't know the name of the gym or his sparring partners? Any of them? How come I watched all of his fights? I wouldn't recognize one of his cornermen today if you held it up and showed me. How come while I don't know who his coach is, who any of his training partners in, or the name of his gym, how about I don't even know what state he was training in? I don't know anything about it. And my guess for why I don't is that he wasn't. Even though he could have won the highest accolades and already had, completely clean, somebody got a hold of him and told him you can do better with this. And I guess we're all going to have to sit back and watch the movie. And when and if The Rock makes the movie, I hope that The Rock understands. Not all of it has been told to us in attempt to come clean, in attempt to tell the world through a documentary that you can find online right now called Smash Machine, actually created more questions than it answered. It left a lot out. And if you're going to make the piece and you're going to tell the story, tell it all and tell it accurately. And up until this point in time, right here, right now, that has not been done. All right, everybody, that is it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And thanks to those of you who answered my question over on Spotify on Tuesday. I want to give a shout out to Beatdown, who said Ryan Garcia knew exactly what he was doing. He must have listened to Chael's words of wisdom. I appreciate that comment. Have a great weekend, everybody. I will be back on Tuesday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.